The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Do you own your home or merely lease it? Millions of people who've bought a leasehold property could benefit from the political desire for more consumer-friendly reforms. We explain what you need to know. If you're heading off on holiday abroad, the pound's latest downturn means you need to get the best possible rate on your spending money. We discuss the hidden charges that could sting travellers using their bank cards abroad and how to avoid these. And in the spirit of saving money, I'll be bringing listeners news of a special subscriber offer at the end of the show. Welcome to The Money Show, the FT's weekly podcast about personal finance and investing. I'm Claire Barrett, FT Money Editor, bringing you this week's news in downloadable form. An estimated 4 million people own their property on a leasehold basis. Well, I say own, but if you're a leaseholder, then ultimately it's the freeholder who owns your property and the land it stands on, and legally they can impose all kinds of charges on you. Over the past few years, there's been growing uproar at how property investors have been able to exploit the leasehold structure. But what hope is there for meaningful reform? Amy Williams, FT Money reporter, joins me now to report on the latest developments. Welcome, Amy.
Hello.
First of all, let's start with what has prompted the calls for reform in the first place.
Well, it all began in around 2007 when some of the biggest UK house builders came up with the ruse of selling their newly built properties on a leasehold basis, which means that the people who bought them never really owned them, or not in the way that they thought they did, and also had to pay annual charges, which are known as ground rents. So some of these builders put clauses into the leaseholds that meant the ground rents doubled every 10 years. So a few years down the line, some of these customers found that they were paying really hefty sums every year to investment funds, which the developers had sold the leaseholds onto.
Yeah, because it's not the house builder at the end of the day who has the right to collect the income from these freeholds.
They
parceled them up.
They were selling these on to investment funds who were obviously very, very glad of the income.
And when we say, you know, the house builders were selling homes on a leasehold basis, of course, it's very normal within the current state of the property market in England and Wales for flats to be sold on a leasehold basis. Indeed, that is a structure that works when you've got lots of different owners in one building and the service charge that the freeholder imposes covers the management of all of those communal areas.
Right. It's the
lifts, etc.
It's the communal areas that is the thing that, you know, means the leasehold system makes a little bit more sense in flats. It is a lot less common for houses. And the house builders I've spoken to this week say that they really started kind of doing this in a really big way, and also inserting the doubling ground rent clauses between 2007 and 2011, which means that it wasn't till around 2015, 16, 17 that some of their customers started to actually look at the details of what they bought and realised how onerous some of these charges were. And of course, on top of that, mortgage lenders started looking at them and thinking, well, hang on a minute, I'm not going to lend against this property with these terms. And the value of the properties as well started to plummet because these huge charges were coming at their owners annually.
Well, it's a big liability. So politicians and campaigners are of the view that the leasehold market in general isn't working for consumers. And this is set to play out at a select committee of MPs later this year. Exciting news. Tell us more.
It is exciting news. And it only came out yesterday. So politicians' attention really was caught in around 2017. So Sajid Javid said in December that he would actually ban all newly built homes being sold on a leasehold basis going forward.
Not flats, just houses.
Not flats, just houses. Yeah. And also they said they would make sure that these ground rents were set at zero or peppercorn, meaning a very tiny amount every year. So that happened. But that, of course, doesn't help the people who are already trapped in houses they bought on a leasehold basis. And these people, for them, the only way out of this nightmare is to try and buy the freehold, which is obviously very difficult because the freehold has been sold to an investment firm who, quite rightly, wants to be compensated for having to give up their lovely income stream.
Yeah, which is quite lucrative if it's doubling every 10 years.
Very lucrative. And they're sort of demanding tens of thousands of pounds. And the homeowners don't have that sort of money. And in any case, even when they did understand that they were buying a leasehold doubling ground rents, they thought that they could buy it after a few years for a few thousand pounds.
And you detail lots of the arguments around this in the feature that you've written for FT Money this week, and what the house builders are doing in terms of the compensation packages that they're awarding, which is definitely worth reading. But the announcement about the Select Committee came just days after the Law Commission released details of reforms that it thinks are needed to the wider leasehold system. And many concern the practice of enfranchisement, which is a long-winded term for describing buying your lease from the freeholder.
Exactly. And it is a long-winded process. So around the time that Sajid Javid was getting very angry, the government also commissioned the Law Commission, which is an independent legal body that advises the government often on legislation and, you know, how to come up with good and fair legislation. The government asked them to have a look at the process by which leaseholders buy their freehold and to try and think of ways in which that process could be made a bit cheaper and a bit simpler. Because at the moment, it's based on around 50 different acts of parliament, the Law Commission reckons. It's very fragmented, very complicated, lots of loopholes, and leaseholders are finding it very, very difficult to negotiate. So the Law Commission, they haven't finished their thinking yet, but they put out something before the end of Parliament, before it breaks up for summer, just kind of to tell everyone where they're up to. And they've come up with a couple of different suggestions for making the process of valuing freeholds simpler and cheaper. And also they've come up with a simplified process for taking it through the courts. So the way in which you contact your freeholder at the moment can be a bit complicated. There are different bits of the court system that you might go through depending on which bit of the legislation you're following. So they're trying to streamline it all and make it simpler and cheaper. And the Select Committee, this is something that the campaigners or the people who are stuck in their leasehold houses have been pushing for. They really want their questions answered. They want to know, you know, whether the house builders were training their sales staff to sell leaseholds. They want questions answered, and they're angry. So they've asked politicians to look into whether enough's being done to help them and whether the house builders should be doing more in terms of setting aside compensation for them, because we haven't really seen a huge amount of that so far.
Well, very interesting. Thanks very much there to Amy Williams. You can read her full report on the state of the leasehold market in the FT Money section in Saturday's Weekend FT, or read online from Friday morning at ft.com/money. And if you're a leaseholder or a freeholder worried about your investment being enfranchised away, we'd love to hear from you. Get in touch with us. Email money@ft.com. Now, it's the time of year that many of us head off for our annual holiday abroad. But as the heatwave continues, there's no need to get hot and bothered about excessive charges when using your debit or credit card overseas. Joining me to help explain foreign currency traps that holiday makers can unwittingly fall into is James Hickman, Chief Commercial Officer at FairFX, the currency card provider. Welcome, James.
Thank you, Claire.
Mercifully cool in the FT Money studio.
It certainly is in the basement.
But many of us have been on holiday and we've been in a situation where we've paid for something on our bank cards, we've been handed the chip and pin terminal, and it says, do you want to pay in GBP, pounds, or EUR, euros? What button should we press?
As a general rule of thumb, you should always pay in local currency. DCC is a very clever trick invented to effectively extract more money from the consumer.
You say DCC.
So dynamic currency conversion.
Right.
Essentially what it is, if you go into a shop or a restaurant and they ask you to pay in, would you like to pay in local currency or sterling? Now, for most people, actually, paying in sterling, how very convenient for me.
And it says the price in sterling. So
absolutely.
You are paying in pounds the amount that the terminal says in pounds, but what they don't tell you is the exchange rate.
Absolutely correct. So it's very opaque in terms of what they do. Now, if you're at a restaurant and you decide, actually, I want to work out what the currency exchange rate is and then track that back to what the market exchange rate is, then obviously you can work out what they're charging.
You're going to have a pretty angry waiter standing there with the card terminal.
And for most people, actually, do you know what? They're enjoying their holiday. They don't want to be working these things out. But what the retailer, the shop or the restaurant doesn't tell you is actually they're charging you up to 8% for the privilege of actually paying in your home currency. So whilst it's a convenience, people are paying very heavily for that convenience.
Now, you've done some research at FairFX into how widespread this phenomenon is. I mentioned you in my column last week. Now, it's fairly common in Europe to be subject to the whims of a dynamic conversion, less so in America because the chip and pin technology just isn't all that. And it's also a growing problem for consumers who are on holiday in Asia. But give me some of the headline stats from your research.
So from our research, and we did a wide range of research on various topics, dynamic currency conversion, we estimate that around £500 million a year is being wasted by Britons overseas. If you add on top of that, people wasting money at airports, which is nearly 100 million.
And that's by changing money at the last minute.
By changing money
with an airport
at the last
operator.
Minute at the airport, exactly. Overseas ATM is another big waste of money, just over 200 million.
And that, again, is because of the dynamic conversion, where they say, do you want pounds or do you want...
Well, it's more about the charges, actually. So when someone puts in a debit or credit card overseas in an ATM, the exchange rate they're getting is not particularly favourable, typically around 3%. So although nowhere near as bad as dynamic currency conversion, it's still a waste of money that you really don't need to spend that. So it just pays to be prepared, look for all the best alternatives, and don't just rock up at the airport and take the first exchange rate you see.
Absolutely not. I mean, even if you prepare ahead and order the currency to collect at the airport, it's better than actually buying it on the day. So even if you pay in the local currency on that chip and pin card terminal, your UK bank card could still charge you for a non-sterling transaction. Now, the charges are typically 3%. Some banks can also impose a surcharge of a few pounds per transaction, meaning the charges can really mount up. And that might be lower than the 8% average dynamic charge that you estimate, but there are still many ways to get around even paying that conversion fee.
Yeah, absolutely. Prepaid cards have become very popular over the last few years, and you preload your currency before you go. So if you have a euro card, you lock in an exchange rate and you take it with you, and you can always pay in local currency there, and you're controlling effectively the exchange rate. Now, the benefit of that is obviously you can buy the currency when the exchange rate's good. So when sterling's strong, for example, you may decide to top up your card, and even if you're not going away for 6 months, you know you've locked it in at a good exchange rate. Other ways, you know, take a little bit of cash with you by all means, but don't necessarily take huge chunks of cash, because obviously it's insecure, and also the exchange rates tend not to be as good. If you shop around, you can get some great rates, but typically prepaid card is a better option.
Now, obviously, FairFX is one provider of these prepaid cards. Other providers in the market include Caxton. We also discussed in my column other ways that you can save money by using credit or debit cards. Now, there's quite a lot of challenger banks on the market at the moment who are realising that this is an attractive way of getting customers to come to them if they offer you fee-free charges when you use your card to spend money abroad, and also in some cases withdraw money from ATMs.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's been going on for many years, actually, not just challenger banks, but credit card companies historically have used the FX angle and free to use overseas as a way of drawing customers in. Now, typically, these offers don't last. It's the same as zero interest rates. They don't tend to last because it costs the company money to do that. So just be careful which ones you get. But there are certainly cards out there that don't charge you, and certainly don't charge you as much as others.
And if you want to read more about the cards that you should have in your wallet when you go on holiday abroad, you can see my Serious Money column from last week. It's online now at ft.com/money, a credit card trick to make your holiday spending money go further. Now, some of the options I discussed in my column include fee-free credit cards. Two that we mentioned are the Barclaycard Platinum Travel Card, which offers fee-free transactions and ATM withdrawals overseas, and the Halifax Clarity credit card, which has similar perks. Obviously, if you're spending money or withdrawing cash on a credit card, then you do need to pay the balance off in full every month and not be hit by charges arising from that, which could negate the money you're saving on the conversion. Another way are Challenger Bank cards, as we mentioned. Metro Bank has got a debit card which charges no fees on spending or ATM withdrawals within Europe, and you can actually open an account in some branches same day if you meet all of their criteria, so it could still be time to get one before you jet off. And other ways that you can save money are app-based banks, including Starling and Monzo, who offer fee-free overseas spending and ATM withdrawals, although some cards limit the amount that you can withdraw to £200 per month. So a couple of ideas there. There are more in the article. And we review about 6 or 7 different methods that you can use to save money overseas. Finally, you know we love a money-saving tip on The Money Show. For a limited time, podcast listeners can save 50% on a digital subscription to the FT. To get the special half-price rate of just £2.65 per week, visit ft.com/offer50. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email the FT Money team, money@ft.com, or follow us on Twitter @ftmoney. We will be back next Thursday at the usual time. Goodbye.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost £27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.